Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Courtroom Confidential, a weekly series covering headline-making criminal cases from across the country. I'm your host, Joshua Ritter. I'm a former Los Angeles district attorney and now a criminal defense attorney, bringing you what I hope are unique insights from both sides of the courtroom. Let's jump right in. First, back in February, lawyers for Ohio man Chad Dorman asked a judge to throw out what prosecutors have described as a confession. Dorman is accused of lining up and shooting his three young sons execution style. His attorneys argued that his Miranda rights were not read in full and that detectives questioned him for hours without a lawyer present. We discussed this issue at length on episode 2 of Courtroom Confidential, if you want to go check that out. At the time, I felt these were ripe avenues for argument by Dorman's attorney. Well, on Monday, Judge Richard Ference ruled that Dorman's rights were in fact violated when a detective failed to, quote, properly and fully advise him of his Miranda rights. The ruling also says his rights were violated a second time when detectives failed to end the interrogation after Dorman, quote, unequivocally and unambiguously invoked his right to counsel. All right, well, what's going on here? First, it's important for us to understand again what Miranda rights are. Miranda rights are concerned with what's called custodial interrogation, meaning first you answer the question, are you in custody? Are the police holding you somehow? Do you have handcuffs on? Are you in the back of a squad car? Are you at the station and not free to go? If you are not free to go, you are in custody. And are you being interrogated? Meaning, are you being asked questions? So voluntary statements usually do not fall into this kind of a concern and inquiry because you're just speaking freely, not in response to any questioning by police. Well, in this case, there was a little bit of both, and that's where things start to get squirrely in these types of cases, where he was in custody, clearly. He was not properly advised when he started to speak. At one point, he asked for an attorney. Then it appears as though he may have gone back and started to speak on his own. There was some question about if asking for an attorney can apply to someone who's not an attorney. End of the day, the judge saw this pretty clearly as a violation of his Miranda rights. Now, what that means is simply that the statements that he gave that were in question, that is what the prosecution is arguing is a admission, a confession, that can't be used at trial. That's all thrown out, which is hugely unfortunate in a case of this magnitude and importance. We're talking about the loss of three young children's lives at the hands of their own father. I mean, it doesn't get worse than this, and it doesn't get more serious than this. And so this is a huge loss. And I think the first takeaway from this is that, I've said this before, law enforcement is not just about getting the bad guys. It's about doing it the right way, because you have to avoid situations like this. When police start to get overly aggressive or overly ambitious or trying to cut corners and bend the rules a little too much, you're going to run into trouble like this. And I'm not saying that the law enforcement did that in this case, but they certainly did enough that a judge found that this defendant's rights were violated. His Miranda rights were violated, therefore keeping that entire confession out of the trial. It's incredibly frustrating in a case of this magnitude. If I were the prosecutor involved, I would be very upset. Many times I think doing it the right way, making sure you are following all the rules to a T, even if that means it's going to take a bit longer, even if that means you might not get the confession, by the way. You might not get exactly what you were hoping for, but what's the purpose in getting a confession that you can't use anyways? But end of the day, will it have an effect on this trial? I don't think so. I think that there is far more evidence and strong evidence to tie this man, this defendant to these heinous crimes. There's eyewitnesses, there's forensic evidence, there's physical evidence that was found on the scene. There's a lot of really horrific stuff. Now, would a confession have just made it all that much easier for everyone, for the prosecutor especially, to convince a jury of this? I think absolutely. I don't think it will change the outcome at trial. It's just unfortunate. And more than anything, it's just a continued takeaway for law enforcement to make sure that you're doing things the right way, even if that's the more difficult way, even if that's the longer way, to make sure that things are properly preserved for evidence at trial. All right, moving on to Indiana, where two hearings were held on Monday in the case of Delphi murder suspect Richard Allen. During the first hearing, Judge Fran Gull ruled on whether or not prosecutors can file additional charges against Allen. Allen had previously only been charged with two counts of murder while committing a felony in his October 2022 arrest. Prosecutors were now attempting to file standalone kidnapping and additional murder charges. Prosecutors argued that the charges, quote, more accurately aligns the charging information with the cause's discovery and the probable cause affidavit. Prosecutors added that the previously released investigative findings included cause that Mr. Allen kidnapped 14-year-old Libby and 13-year-old Abby by force prior to their murders near the Monon High Bridge, and in the process, the girls were killed. But with that charge, prosecutors wouldn't necessarily have to prove that Allen was the one who actually killed the girls. So in addition to the kidnapping charges, prosecutors also added two counts of murder, which is defined as knowingly or intentionally killing another person, according to Indiana law. Judge Gull dismissed the two counts of kidnapping during the hearing, but approved the other two charges. Allen is now charged in the murders of teen girls Abby Williams and Libby German while committing or attempting to commit kidnapping. In the second hearing, prosecutors accused the defense team of contempt for its vigorous defense of Allen, including inadvertent evidence leaks to social media followers. An attorney representing Allen's lawyers argued that they played no active role in the leaks and did not violate any court orders. Judge Gull said that she will make a decision by mid-May regarding the contempt complaint. Jury selection begins for the trial on May 13th. Well, what's going on here? I'm going to take the second part of this first, this hearing regarding contempt of the attorneys. We have been covering this case for a while, and it never ceases to amaze me how much noise is surrounding the pre-litigation of this case. First, you had these allegations, these defense arguments, strategies, whatever you want to call them, of a ritualistic cult sacrifice being the real cause of these deaths. Then you had the evidence leaks, which were incredible. Then you had the attorneys being removed from the case. Then there's an appeal. He says he has a right to attorney of his choosing. The attorneys were put back on the case. End of the day, prosecutors need to take command of this case and get down to the business of prosecuting rather than being sidetracked with all of this noise. I really feel that that is true. This is a very important case. The country, the world is watching. This is a case that has a lot of notoriety. It's important to that community. It's important to the families of those two young girls who lost their lives in a horrible, horrible way. Let's not get sidetracked with all the nonsense about, were these defense attorneys leaking stuff? I mean, yes, if they're leaking stuff, that has to stop. But these contempt hearings and the trying to get them kicked off and asking for sanctions and all of this other nonsense, get down to the business of putting this person in prison if you believe that you have the evidence to prove that. Now, as far as the changing of these charges, this really all boils down to different theories of criminal intent. There's a concept called felony murder. And what felony murder says is that, and this is kind of the same but different in different jurisdictions, but in California, which I know best, essentially what it says is that if in the commission of a certain enumerated felony, something like rape, something like kidnapping, really horrible types of crimes, if someone is killed during the course of that, you can substitute their intent to have committed that underlying felony, meaning their intent to have committed kidnapping, their intent to have committed rape, for the required mental state, the intent to have committed premeditated murder. So if a murder results out of that kidnapping or that rape or whatever is the other crime being charged, that felony, they can be tried for first degree premeditated murder without actually having to show the premeditation of the murder. I know that's a lot to digest, but it's a way, it's a tool for prosecutors to prove first degree murder charges when they may have more convincing evidence of the underlying felony. And that's, I think, what all of this is about here, is they're saying now that they have essentially dismissed these kidnapping charges, or they were dismissed by the judge. And I think that clears up the case, because it was either that these young girls were killed during a kidnapping, or he kidnapped them to kill them. The kidnapping is not the moving charge here. It's the murders. So he kidnapped them in order to kill them, or he kidnapped them and killed them in the course of that kidnapping. Either way, those are the two theories they're going to proceed to at trial to prove first degree premeditated murder. And that is really the purpose of all of this, is to secure that type of conviction to make sure that justice was done. We will continue to follow this case and update you as we have them. All right, finally, we're back to Massachusetts again, where Karen Reed was back in court again on Wednesday. This time her lawyers wanted phone records from people they claim helped frame their client for murder. Prosecutors, on the other hand, claim the request is based on inaccurate conclusions injected with hyperbole. Reed is charged with the second-degree murder of her boyfriend, Boston Police Officer John O'Keefe. Reed is accused of backing over O'Keefe with her SUV before leaving him to die in a January 2022 snowstorm. Reed's attorneys are seeking phone records from retired Boston Police Officer Brian Albert. O'Keefe was found on Albert's front lawn hours after Albert hosted a gathering that O'Keefe was invited to. The defense has claimed O'Keefe was beaten up inside of the home and dragged outside. According to the prosecution, Reed struck O'Keefe with her Lexus SUV when she dropped him off there, and he never entered the home. The judge did not immediately rule on the request. The defense is also expected to argue their, get this, third motion to dismiss the case on Tuesday. What's going on here? Talk about noise surrounding a case. This one has it all. And I have to say, a little round of applause for the defense in that they are certainly not leaving any argument unturned. No argument has been left behind. They are pursuing every single avenue that they possibly can to try to mount a defense on their client's behalf. And I always say good. That's their job. Their job is to vigorously defend their client. And if that means pursuing anything and everything, fine. Now, it's up to the judge to shut that down if it becomes ridiculous, and to make sure that these arguments, if they're meritless, don't receive a lot of court time. But that's the defense's job. The judge's job, of course, play referee. And the prosecution obviously has to answer these issues as they arise. And what essentially is happening here with this argument about O'Keefe being back inside the home, him being beaten up there, is that is the way in which the defense then has even the excuse to argue why should they get these telephone records. Because you don't just get to say, I want the telephone records of everybody in a 1 mile radius of where this murder allegedly took place. You have to attach, there has to be a nexus to the crime as to why this is relevant information. You cannot just say the government can go get it and I want you to go get it, government. You have to have a reason for why you want to bring this evidence in. So they have to make some sort of connection. And I think that's where their argument of is going, that we believe our theory, he was beat up inside of the home. Therefore, the phone records of the people inside of that home become relevant to us. And a judge is going to have to make a call. But the threshold question is, do you have evidence he was inside the home? And they might say, well, our evidence is going to be on those phones. And that's not the way it works, because then that becomes a circular argument of, well, we'll show you the evidence as soon as you allow us to get that evidence. And so this, I think, is going to become the obstacle for the defense, is to convince a judge as to why the people inside of that home are even relevant. Do you have any evidence that he was inside that home? And that's where all these issues that we've heard about, if you've been following this case, regarding the relationships between the people in the home and O'Keefe and Reed and the people, the officers who responded in relationships there, the more and more they can show that there might be something relevant about the people inside of that home and about their phones, the more that it becomes a convincing argument the defense hopes to the judge in this case. But I'll say this, this still boils down to discovery. We're just still talking about what are they being given access to. We're not talking about what are they going to be able to present in court, which is a different question. A judge may say, I'm going to allow you to explore this because I think you've laid the foundation or given me enough of a reason to allow you to explore this, and I'll allow you to get that information. But I'm not just going to allow you to spread a bunch of conspiracy theories and a bunch of red herrings all over my courtroom. They are reluctant to allow what we call third-party culpability for wild goose chases and conspiracy theories to take up space inside of their courtroom. And a judge is just going to shut all of that down if there's not real evidence of somebody inside of that home being involved somehow in his alleged murder. So again, this could be a bunch of noise surrounding a bunch of pretrial and evidentiary hearings that may not have any bearing on what is actually presented in court. And one indication that the judge may not be giving this all that much attention is the idea that I don't believe that trial date has been moved yet. We will see. As always, we're monitoring this case and we'll continue to give you updates as we have them. All right. Also making headlines this week out of California, in a motion filed on Monday, prosecutors want Rebecca Grossman's access to jailhouse phone calls cut off. The motion detailed several jailhouse calls Grossman had with her daughter and husband since her February 23rd conviction for killing two young brothers in a crosswalk while speeding on a residential street. According to court documents, Grossman told her daughter to make public a deputy-worn body camera video that had been sealed by the judge and to direct another person to talk to the judge about a new trial. Incredible. She also encouraged tracking down witnesses to get them to say their testimony was falsely directed. Really remarkable for the prosecutors to have to make that kind of a motion in this case. Out of Ohio, Ohio mother Crystal Candelario received a life sentence without parole on Monday for what the judge called the act of ultimate betrayal. Candelario left her 16-month-old daughter, Jalen, alone for 10 days while she went on vacation. This case is just heartbreaking to me. I have children of my own, one of them around that age, and the idea of leaving this little girl for 10 days so she could go on a vacation is just beyond evil and disgusting to me. She was charged with aggravated murder and child endangering. Out of Idaho, a jury convicted a former Idaho State Police trooper Tuesday of murdering his wife and staging it to look like a suicide. Daniel Howard was found guilty of second-degree murder and domestic battery, but not of first-degree murder. During this past weekend, Howard was also arrested at the Spokane International Airport. His attorney claimed he was helping a friend, drop off a rental car and forgot he wasn't allowed within 2 miles of the airport. Prosecutors said he was attempting to flee right after they rested their case and was eluding deputies who were surveilling him at the time. He will be sentenced on May 23rd. I can't imagine those antics are going to play out well for him with the judge. And on the docket for next week, out of New Hampshire, the second trial of a man accused of brutally murdering two women is underway. Timothy Verrill initially stood trial in October 2019, but a mistrial was declared midway through the state's case in chief after it was determined that there were a significant number of discovery violations. Again, it's not always about just getting the bad guys. It's about doing it the right way so that you don't have to go through things like this. All right, folks. Once again, I am your host, Joshua Ritter. You can find me on all social media platforms at Joshua Ritter ESQ or at joshuaritter.com. On a personal note, I just wanted to share that I just finished a huge trial in my day job. Yes, I still do work as an attorney, and it took up much of my time for the last 2 months. With that behind me, please be on the lookout for much more coming from this channel. We're planning on creating both a podcast, doing live streams, watching trials live, having guests, and much, much more. I thank you all for tuning in and for being a part of this journey. And thank you again for joining me. As always, if you enjoyed this, please like, please subscribe, please share your thoughts on these cases in the comments. Feel free to suggest cases you'd like us to cover in the future. Have a great weekend. I'll see you next week. And thank you again for joining us for another episode of Courtroom Confidential.